author J.H. Fleming.
And I'm science fiction and fantasy author Philip Dreyer Duncan. And with us tonight is the nicest person we know. We have with us author Shane Eason. And I can't tell you anything about him because I just went to ShaneEason.com to see if he had a bio I could pick apart. And I got this this warning message. It says, your connection is not private. Attackers might be trying to steal your information from ShaneEason.com. So he might be nice, but his website is apparently very dangerous.
It's all a facade.
Is it because I'm American?
Yeah. No, it's nice to see you. It's nice to see you guys and hear your voices again. It's only been a month, but yeah, it feels like it's been a little while already.
I know, a month too long.
Right.
Shane Eason is our good friend we met at World Fantasy in New Orleans a year and a month ago. And if you listen to the World Fantasy recap episode, we did a little chat with him on there. But we brought him on today for his own full episode.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you're going to have to give us your own bio because your website's trying to steal my data.
My own bio? I write fantasy.
I write books.
I've read books since I was a very young age. As soon as I could read, I would read anything that I could get my hands on. And it's always been that way. And same thing with writing stories. I've written stories for as long as I can remember. Started with, you know, writing scribbles on paper. I had the typewriter, learning how to type on a computer. You know, it's always been a part of who I am, is telling stories, always. It's never gone away. You know, there's been times in my life where I had to focus more on business or raising the family, but that creative side was always a part of who I am, always.
Now, I know you have one book that's been under contract for a minute, but you also have a really interesting story about your very first novel that I think from a listener standpoint for people trying to break into the business, there's a lot of value sort of in that story if you want to tell it.
Yeah, it goes back to 2007. I signed a contract with a small publisher out of Louisiana. They were called West Bank Publishing. Briefly, I mean, they read my book, they loved it, and they wanted to publish it, and I was young, I suppose, at the time. I didn't know anything about publishing, I didn't know anything about editing, I didn't know anything about anything, other than that this publisher loved my work and wanted to publish it. So, I mean, why not? I mean, this was exciting, right? And let's do it. And
yeah, of course.
You know, and we went through the editing process, and there was a learning curve there for me. I was dealing with two people. There was a publisher whose also name was Shane, and then the editor was Carol, and they're two wonderful people. So I'll make it clear that, you know, my story here has nothing, there's no ill will towards them. Great, great people. You know, and then the book was scheduled to come out at the end of 2007. And somewhere along, sometime during the year, they came to me and they said, we got to delay your book by a year. I think there were some financial difficulties that they came into, and they wanted to bump the book. And I'm like, no, that's fine. Let's bump the book. However, we got a review in the Library Journal notification, and they were very, very excited about that. It was a big deal. And so what they ended up doing is like, well, we can't delay the book anyway. We got to go now. And I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. I mean, let's go. And it was exciting. And so then we get into this, the whole PR thing. You know, they wanted to, with the Library Journal review, they really wanted to just make some noise with the book, I guess. They really wanted to get my name out there. They wanted to make a statement. And that was cool and exciting. And the publisher, Shane, he comes up with this idea. He wanted to, he strongly felt that I could be the next Robert Jordan. And my gut reaction was, no, I'm not the next Robert Jordan. I'm Shane Eason. I have my own voice. I have my own stories to tell. I don't think I'm anything like Robert Jordan. I've read his books, and I think that's wrong. And Shane said, no, I strongly believe that you have talent and you could be the next Robert Jordan. And so then I went to my editor, and we were communicated by email, and we went back and forth. And I wrote her this long letter telling her how I felt, and I felt it was wrong. I didn't want to be compared to Robert Jordan. She emailed me back.
That's a pretty big name to be thrown out for somebody's first book.
Yeah, I know. It really was. And so she emailed me back and she says, like, look, like, Shane loves your book, loves it. He's investing in it. He thinks quite highly of you. This is the route that he wants to go. Let's just roll with it. Let's do it. And at that point, I mean, what could I really say? Right. And so, you know, we did that and yeah, it backfired pretty hard. It really did. Like, you know, you're setting yourself, you've set a standard now that, I mean, Robert Jordan, like, come on, like, this guy was like one of the biggest name in the industry back in 2007. Yeah, right. He just passed away, which even makes it worse. I said no ill will towards the people that I'm working with, but it was a mistake. Like, that wasn't the right thing to do.
Sure.
You know, everyone, they put out these PR releases and they said that, you know, Shane Easton's going to be the next Robert Jordan and he's going to take the mantle, you know, the torch, and he's going to pave the way for future authors. I was so uncomfortable with it and I went along with it, and I really wish that they hadn't done that. And what happened was, and it's evident. I mean, people read this and they get excited. Well, here's the next Robert Jordan. And yep. They start reading the book and they're like, no, this is not Robert Jordan, right? This is not even close to Robert Jordan. So it really did backfire on them. The Library Journal review came out and it was a great review. And the book, that alone, provided a lot of success because a lot of libraries in North America picked it up. There was... One of my favorite stories was in New Zealand. A librarian ordered the book and turns out her maiden name was Eason. And she felt, so with Eason, there's either one S or two S's in it. And the two S Easons, if you go back far enough, were related, right? So the librarian felt that she was related, and I put her in contact with my grandfather, and they were able to trace back our family tree and found the relation, and that was pretty neat.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was all right. And then there's a nice website in Europe. I can't remember exactly where they're stationed out of, but they're called risingshadow.net. And they picked up The Wrath of Tsar, and they did a nice review. And that kind of spawned some success in Finland.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, that's pretty wild that it picked up there.
Yeah, like Finland turned out to be my best sales out of any country. It was crazy, and I had a lot of fun emails coming from people that that really enjoyed the book, and yeah, that was fun. So overall, I mean, the experience was mixed. Like it was exciting, it was fun. The Robert Jordan thing, you know, as a caution to, you know, any new authors. I mean, there's a way to do it, and then if you feel, you know, an audience will like your book because they like Robert Jordan books, well, then you say that.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't say, I'm Robert Jordan. You say, people who read Robert Jordan will love my books. Possibly. And there's a better way to say that, obviously.
Yeah, I remember several years ago, JH and I were at the bookstore, which, by the way, at the moment, JH is having a technical difficulty, so she will be being quiet for the moment. But we'll fix her here directly. But anyways, a few years back, I guess it's been several years ago now, JH and I went into Barnes & Noble, and, you know, like, my favorite author growing up was David Gimmel, right? And so I'm, like, trying to choose something. We're getting ready to go on a trip. Actually, we're getting ready to go to a convention. And I was like, I just need a book for the convention. And I see, and I don't remember the author, and, like, you know, no negativity towards them anyway, because they didn't do this, right? Their publisher did it. But on the cover of the book, the blurb they put on it wasn't like a quote blurb, just a blurb like a marketing type copyright blurb they put on, right? And it referred to him as it said the heir to the Gimmel throne. And I was like, well, you succeeded in selling this to me, but if it's not, I'm gonna be pretty hot about it. And about 50 pages in, it got chucked against the side of a hotel room wall in Memphis, Tennessee, and I was just, it was the same thing, right? Because you basically prodded me, you dangled in front of me, here's your favorite author, here's the person who's going to quote-unquote replace them for you, right? And it didn't. And so, yeah, that sucked. And I think you're right. I think if you have a good comp title, that's fine, right? If you can say, you know, my book is X meets X, that's great. People get what the book is. You're not saying you're better than them. You're not saying that you are them or that you're going to be on the same level. So I agree with you, Shane. I think that wasn't the right move for them to do.
And I was going to add with the comp titles, that's also a really good thing to have with querying. And in my new job as well, that actually came up with I'll go ahead and clarify. I work for as an administrative assistant for a literary agent. And so one of her clients' books just came out in October. And as part of like the outreach for that, one of my jobs was to look up like this comp title to see people who had reviewed this book and then develop like a list of people like, okay, we're going to send them an email because they liked this book. So they should like this book because it has similar themes or whatever. So the comp titles are useful both for that and for just querying in general. But yeah, I do agree. You have to be very careful about the way you word the comparison. Like, it's one thing to say, like, oh, you know, if you liked this, you'll like this as well. But to claim, like, oh, this will replace that, that's a little different in my mind.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And in my case, it was, like I said, it was even made a little bit worse because Robert Jordan had just passed away.
Yeah.
And it was the timing. I mean, I the intentions were there. You know, they were excited about my book, and he generally felt that way. But it was just, you know, I think just a little bit of experience on our part, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you had to learn that lesson the hard way, but that's why we brought it up here. So anybody who's a listener that, you know, is trying to make their way in this business will know maybe that's not the best idea in the world. That said, you are all welcome to claim that your writing will be the next Philip Dreyer Duncan. That would make me laugh so hard. So you are welcome to market your books that way, that you will be the next me. I'm okay with that. Oh, so Shane, you've been going to World Fantasy for so long.
Yeah, since 2008, just after, you know, going back to my editor, she had found out that World Fantasy was in Calgary in 2008. And she mentioned to me, like, you should go to this con. And I did. And that's the first time I met, I met Gerald there that year, and a few others, Susan. I was just drawn right in.
Yeah.
I was like, yep, this is my other home. And I haven't missed a year since.
Yeah, we got drawn in New Orleans when a bunch of unruly Canadians adopted us.
You gotta watch those guys. Seriously.
Oh, by the way, that reminds me. Last week we covered a news story where about Kobo's book report.
Yeah.
And it said you like to read after dinner. Is that true?
Not right after dinner. I mean, I did hear that. I listened to the podcast and I heard that, and I read it when I go to bed. That's when I do my reading.
I think that counts, right? That's in between.
It does.
That's after dinner.
Yeah.
I guess, technically.
I suppose. Yeah.
You're such a stereotype, Shane.
Well, there's after dinner and then there's bedtime.
don't come at me with your hobbit definitions.
Yeah.
I guess the reason I brought up the convention thing, so have you done many others in the United States? Because I know there's some local.
Just WorldCon.
Yeah.
I did WorldCon in Chicago. That wasn't last summer. It was the summer prior. Yeah. It was different.
Yeah, we were going to go to that one. JH was going to drag me there kicking and screaming because Charles DeLint was supposed to be, I think, the guest of honor. But he backed out, so we didn't end up doing it. But hey, it looks like we're going to drag you to another one. In February.
Superstars. Yeah.
We're doing it. It's gonna be good.
Yeah.
I am very excited that you signed up for that. I think you will be very, very pleased that you did.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. No, I'm looking forward to it. It'd be nice to hang out with you guys again, and no, it'll be a good time. Learn something along the way, hopefully too.
Yeah, and then we just have to figure out if we're gonna suck it up and go to Scotland next year, right?
Yeah, not me. I don't think I can make that one work. But the following year, WorldCon is Seattle, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Is it? I don't know. I don't remember.
So that one makes sense for me. That's an easy one for me to get to.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one last thing before we move on to the news. What would be your one tip for the newbie author? It can be business or craft.
You know, having your work read by people who read books, this is a tough industry, and I've certainly learned some lessons over the years, and I think it's you need people who are going to read your work and give honest feedback, and it has to be by someone who reads your genre. It has to be someone who's read similar books, and it has to be someone who's willing to be honest with you. And as an author, you have to be willing to take that feedback and build upon it. And not all the feedback is going to be right for you. You know, it's really important to understand that too. And that's the job of the author to sort through that. So I think that's really important.
Fair enough. I mean, you know, when you talked about hard lessons, I mean, that's really part of the reason why I wanted to do this podcast in this format, is because I feel like, basically, as a jumping off point from where I really started taking my writing seriously, I basically made every bad decision that I possibly could to get to where I'm at today. Like, everything that I could do the wrong way, I basically did, I think, you know, from a business standpoint.
But this is life, though, right? I mean, this applies to everything in life. We always seem to learn the hard way, and from those lessons learned, it moves us forward. And the people who are successful typically learn from those lessons. And that's usually the way.
Well, and it helps to get a community around us of people, of peers and people who are trying to accomplish the same thing we are. So maybe we can learn from each other and avoid some of those pitfalls, right?
Always, yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll go to the news and see if JH has actually fixed her microphone. All right, our first news story this evening is that we got Shane's website to come up. I don't know why it was blocking me and trying to steal my data before, but it seems good now. And he's got a really funny contact page. You guys should all go to ShaneEason.com and look at it, what it says on his contact page. I enjoyed that. In our second news story, JH got her microphone fixed, so if she sounded like garbage in the first segment, she's very, very sorry. And hopefully she sounds normal now.
Yay.
All right. Our first actual news story is that Writer Beware has some new things they would like for us to be aware of. Yeah, I said that right. Maybe. The first one that they're calling out is people are getting emails from somebody claiming to be from discoverpublishers.com. And basically, the email will come. It'll be somewhat generic, but kind of flattering, and kind of try to convince you that a bunch of people are interested in your books, and they will help you find a publisher. So basically, they're just trying to promote the idea that they will help sort you to a publisher, but the suspicion is that they're just trying to gather a list for different vanity presses to target people. Good old vanity presses. I bet you a vanity press would be happy to promote you as the next Robert Jordan.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I'm sure they would.
And Stephen King as well.
Yeah, yeah. Line them up.
Line them up. We'll compare you to whoever you'd like. That's a joke. Obviously, vanity presses aren't going to do any actual promotion for you.
No. No, they're just looking for money.
Yeah, so again, that first one, if you get an email that comes from discoverpublishers.com, watch out for that. And then the second one, in a similar fashion, this one's coming from resellerventures.com is what their email will say. And these ones lay it on pretty thick. It's very generic, but like super flattering towards your book. And like, you know, what a thought-provoking piece of literature, things like that. And then they're basically asking you for some information and whatever. Writer Beware wasn't really sure what their end game was. They don't know anybody who's dinked around with it to kind of figure it out. But those are the two to be on the lookout for. If you get emails, be careful. Again, that was Discover Publishers and Reseller Ventures. So thanks to Writer Beware.
It's almost heartbreaking, isn't it? Like there's people out there that don't know any different, and they're going to get one of these emails, and they're flattering their work, and they're going to be so excited.
Yep.
It's awful.
Yeah. That sounded like the amount of emotion in that you had is the amount of emotion I had last night. I've been like on this mission wherever I've had free time to just get on Twitter and Blue Sky. And I'm like just hashtagging NaNoWriMo and going through and finding people listen, everyone who has Twitter or Blue Sky should be doing this. Go onto your Twitter, search hashtag NaNoWriMo, sort by latest, and then just scroll down to the people who are posting about having completed NaNoWriMo, because, and do it for two reasons. One, because you're going to see how heartbreaking it is that these people busted their ass for a month to write 50,000 words or whatever, and no one cares. No one even hearts it. No one does anything. So then step two is that you congratulate them and you give it some hearts and then you move to the next one, because I can't catch them all by myself.
Yeah, I like that. That's great. There's, again, in our writing community, we really do need to support each other, because this business can be rather brutal at times, can't it?
Yeah, it really can. And I mean, I see it all the time on Twitter. It's extra, and Twitter, Blue Sky, wherever. It's extra bad right now for NaNo. Like, that one's really just such a bummer to me that these people work so hard and they're just, you know, looking for, you know, just a little bit of love, and they're just throwing it out into the void. No one cares, you know, but it's year round. You know, if you go look at hashtag writing community on Twitter, sort to latest, every day you'll see people being like, yeah, I finished my first book. Crickets. They're not even promoting it yet. They're just saying, I did this thing. I did this amazing thing. And no one cares, you know?
Yeah. We care.
We care.
We care, Phil.
We do. I care. Yeah. Shane cares. JH might.
Yep.
I care.
JH, would you like to tell us about Majestic Christmas Trees?
Sure. So Penguin Books donated a Christmas tree to the St. Pancras train station in London, and it's a Christmas tree made entirely out of books. I've seen stuff like this before, but this picture is... like, the tree is ginormous. Like, I've seen, like, some that's, you know, in people's homes, and they're, like, regular tree size. This one is way bigger. So if you haven't seen it, definitely go look up that picture.
Yeah, it's super cool. It looks like a castle or something.
Mm-hmm.
It almost looks... it could be 100 feet tall.
Yeah, did you see what they put at the bottom there? Did you guys notice what those are?
Well, like, little reading nooks?
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
It's really small on my screen, so I'm like, it kind of looks like a fireplace. I don't know.
No, this thing's so big that, like, they've carved in at the bottom, like, little nooks where you can sit down and read. Yeah.
Nice.
So, pretty cool. Look up the Christmas tree of books. Or, you know, wait, go click on it in the show notes, because I'll have a link.
Yeah, specifically this one, like I said, there you may come across others, you know, someone... a tree in someone's house that's, you know, regular tree size. But yeah, look for this one in particular.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. All right. And our next news story is not for you listeners or for my fellow pod throwers this evening. It's really just for me. I saw that there's I can never say his name right. I got to embarrass myself. Andrzej Sapkowski? Is that right? JH, you like to correct me?
Sounds close.
Sounds good to me. Yep.
Thank you, Shane. All right. Well, anyways, he is writing yet another Witcher novel, which made me very, very happy to hear. All he has said at this point is that it will follow Geralt, but it's going to be a standalone, so not part of the main series. And I don't know if he means that in the way like the last one he did, which was Sword in the Storm? Or, no, that's not right. I don't remember. The last one he did, which was like a prequel, so I don't know if he means like something like that, or I don't mean if he means something completely different. I don't care. He's writing another Witcher book, so that's cool. I'm happy.
Yeah, I have a confession. I haven't read any of the books, but I'm a huge Witcher fan. I mean, I've played the games, and I love the show, and I own the books. I just have to make time to read them, along with all the other books that I have.
God, Shane, if you weren't so nice, I'd yell at you.
That is my pain as well.
Yeah, so many books.
I would say that's my pain. Like, I have, it's got to be, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 at this point that I'm just slowly making my way through because there are just way too many of them. And then I keep adding more because I'm an addict. But
yeah, an addict or just a book lover, right? Yeah.
The floor will collapse and you'll get to start over.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be fine.
No.
Everything's going
to
be fine.
It's going to be fine. All right. Shane, have you listened to enough of the podcast to know about the robot voice?
No.
All right.
No.
Darn.
What's the robot voice?
All right. JH, I think it's your turn.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to cover the story, right?
All right. In our continued coverage of our robot overlords.
Nailed it. You should do it every time.
Yeah.
At least until we find our dwarf again.
Yep.
Do you think that... So here's my thing. I've been wondering about this for a while. I've not addressed the fact that he's not been here in, like, well over a month. And I'm just wondering if there's, like, any random listeners out there in the world that are like, what happened to him? Where's Chris?
Right.
Where is he? Normally, Shane, our friend Chris, is on here, and he does that intro for us and covers the AI stories. But
the robo voice?
Yeah. Yeah. In our continued coverage. So, our one AI story this week, when I get this ad out from in front of my face. So, sort of an interesting little story, not directly related to our industry, but adjacent to. So, basically what happened is Sports Illustrated just deleted some articles after a report suggested that the authors didn't actually exist. Now, according to Sports Illustrated, they were utilizing a third-party company for writing these stories, and supposedly they have broken off their relationship with that third party, despite the third party claiming that they were actually written by people, but under different names. That's an interesting situation that a company... I mean, we're going to see this, right? That a company could be putting out content, especially from a third party, and not even realize they're putting out AI-generated stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that makes sense for, like, if it's Sports Illustrated. So I'm just thinking of, like, the New York Times or the Washington Post, where you have, you know, people who have various articles in it. And, like, they're not necessarily an employee of those publications, but they, right, you know, submitted an article and it was approved for publication. Same way you would, like, a short story or something.
Yeah, well, in this case, it sounds like they just were straight up, like, hired this other company to write articles for them. Which sounds weird because you would think, like, Sports Illustrated probably has a bunch of writers. But then if you think about it, in today's world, everybody is just, like, all these major companies just have people writing tons of articles for them so they can get ad revenue, you know?
Yeah, this is going to be a battle that's going to happen here moving forward for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, you never know. You might have a robot in your pants and it makes you want to dance. Woo!
There you go. Yep.
You guys can see the look JH is giving me, right? I appreciate Shane for just rolling with it. He's just like, yeah, Phil says weird stuff. It's fine. I'm used to
it. I've known you long enough now, Phil. It's all good.
Right. So that's our news.
All right. For our tools segment this time, Shane's going to talk to us a bit about critique groups. So, Shane?
Yeah, so my critique group was formed over the years at Roll Fantasy, just meeting and connecting with fellow writers. And it started with meeting Joshua Palmateer. But through him, I finally met his brother in subsequent years, Jason. And I think that was in Columbus. I want to say that goes back to 2016. I think that was the year. And through Joshua basically said, you know, you and you guys are going to form this critique group and this is what you're going to do and it's going to be great. And I was like, sure. I mean, let's do that. And it originally it was myself, Jason Palmateer, Kevin Kaufman, Rob Riddell. And we formed this little group and almost immediately it, I mean, the benefit of having someone, as I alluded to earlier, of reading your work from other people who read similar novels. And since we formed that group, we've all reached a level of success. And as we continue to go back to World Fantasies, you know, Jason would go to WorldCon, for example, and he would meet someone, and that's how we got Nathan Toronto into our group. Most recently at the last two World Fantasies ago, we grew by another couple people. That was when Beth and Becca joined us. And now we've got this little writing community that we, you know, it's a very relaxed community. We submit short versions of our novels. Like, we try to stick it to 50 pages, and we've always said, you know what, we're putting it out there. If you got time to read it, that's great. We're not in a panic. There's no timelines. Once in a while, one of us will be like, I've written a short story that I want to submit to this anthology. Here's the deadline. And then the next thing you know, everyone's attacked it. Everyone's read it and put their thoughts in. So it really just works for us. And over the years, I've seen our writing just grow and grow. And all of us have had some level of success. Jason, most recently, he was... I'm not sure what he placed again, but he was runner-up in Writers of the Future.
Nice.
Yeah, that was really nice. Kevin as well. Kevin, I believe Kevin, he's been runner-up for Writers of the Future twice, maybe even three times. And, you know, myself, I got, you know, I ran The Rhythm of a Jaded Heart to the group, which then led me to my contract to get published. Mm-hmm. We've all had success at some level, and it just that atmosphere of working together, seeing this accomplishment, that energy that comes from it. You know, when someone has success, it comes back through the group tenfold, right? And I can't stress enough. I never imagined when Joshua said to me, "You guys need to set up this critique group, and you're going to do it." I had no idea. I had no idea what I was getting into. Yeah. And the benefits that would come from that, right? It is so important to form. And every city in North America, they have a writing community. And for new authors that are out there, they need to find that writing community, and they need to be a part of it and join it and have their work read, right, by like-minded people. Yeah. And that's so important.
So do you guys, do you have like regular meetings, or do you just communicate through chat, or what do you guys do?
Just email. I mean, we post our stuff. We use Google Drive to post our work. Mm-hmm. It's a secure shared folder that we have, and it only has access to people that are in the group. And yeah, we typically, like I said, it's pretty relaxed. Like, you know, we try it for novels. We'll do like 50 pages at a time. And it's like, and then we just notify the group in an email saying that I've posted the next 50 pages of my novel. It's there if you want to read it. We don't keep tabs on, you know, I've critiqued, you know, 300 pages of yours. I expect, you know, 3 pages of mine. Mm-hmm. We don't operate that way. We want to keep it relaxed. We want to keep it fun. You know, it's there if you want to participate. If you don't want to participate, you don't have to. Right. And that's our motto. And like I said, like, I just wrote a short story for an anthology that I'm going to submit. And I just put it out there, and I told them what it was for. And within 3 days, you know, it was literally ripped apart. It was great. Loved it. And I can't imagine now submitting that story without those guys' feedback on it. Mm-hmm. Can't do it. Right. So no, it works. It works really, really good for us.
Well, I think part of that is you have to find the right group of people, right?
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And we've had, you know, over the years, we've had a couple people that came in and they kind of hung around for a year and then they sort of, you know, disappeared. We've got a couple other members in our group that don't participate a whole lot, but, you know, we've asked them a couple of times, like, you know, would you guys like to be removed off the email? And we're like, nope, we're still here. We're still interested. We're just working.
Is that a train?
Yep. That
sounded like a train.
That was a very weird sound. I took a poll from the listeners. That train sounded weird to me. I mean, it kind of made me jump up my seat. Totally messed up poor Shane's stream of thought, because both Jessica, or JH and I both kind of like, sounds normal now. Sounds like a normal train. All right, well, train ad, and then we'll be back to finish this conversation about critique groups. Whee! J.
Jack remembers being human, but that was long ago. Now he's just a scarecrow, content to spend his days quietly sitting in his field and watching the clouds go by. He has but one friend, Evelyn, yet that is enough for a scarecrow with fleeting memories of his days as a man. Until Evelyn makes a deal with a witch and is cursed to become a crow. As the wolves rage their war across the land, Jack and Evelyn must brave constant danger from animals and humans alike, and the hunter is ever on their trail. To break a witch's curse, determination alone isn't enough. Sometimes sacrifice is needed, but are they willing to pay the price? Find out in Jack of Crows by author J.H. Fleming. Caw-caw, caw-caw, tookie, tookie.
So, Shane was telling us about his critique group. Shane, do you know I used to be in a critique group? It was with a pretty cool person and then an absolute witch.
How so?
Well, I would tell you, but she's glaring at me right now.
Oh. yeah, she is. Yeah.
JH and I early on before we got together, we were in a little writing group together. It was much the same thing, right? Like, we really, I think, helped each other level up and stuff. And then, obviously, her and I still do that because we still hammer through everything that the other one does.
Right.
But it sounds to me like you found a really good group, and I think that that's key, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I love my writing group. They're a great group of people. They inspire. All our writing levels are more or less the same. We have different strengths, different weaknesses. And, you know, I always feel that when I need them, they're there for me. And that's the coolest part, right? You know, it's like I said, I just finished a short story and, you know, you put it out there and they did exactly what I needed. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I would just throw in, like, I think my one caution to people, because I think you're right, and I think you, like, 100,000% I have to agree with Shane on the community aspect of it. Like, this is a lonely, hard business with a lot of pitfalls, so the more people you know, the more people you have to learn from, the more people on the same journey as you, the better. So all of that for sure. And I'm like 80%, so I'm 100% with him on critique groups for his experience with his critique group.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to throw in the caution of, like, that's not been everyone's experience, right? So, like, I know other writers who have been like, that critique group was the worst experience of my life, right? Or,
right.
Was it Chuck Palahniuk who, joined a writing group at some point? It was like with a bunch of like elderly ladies or something. was it the right fit for him?
Oh yeah. Wasn't there a story like he had one book and it was like a bit out there or something? Like, there was some, I don't know if it was adult content or whatever. These ladies read it. Yeah. They read it and they're like, it was really well written. We don't want you to give us books anymore.
Yeah,
like, basically
kicked
him out of the group. Like, please don't come back anymore.
Which, that's just a funny one. But the main thing is, like, make sure that if you decide to join a critique group that, you know, people are displaying the behaviors that Shane described and not toxic ones, right? Because you will,
right.
You can run into people who are more interested in, you know, for lack of a better term, they're more interested in their ego than they are the well-being of the whole group, right? So you just have to be cautious and smart about, you know, who you spend your time with, right? Spend your time with positive people who believe in what you're doing and give that back, and you'll be all right probably, yeah?
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you, Phil. I mean, sometimes feedback is given with the best intentions, but it's really up to the author at the end of the day to... Mm-hmm. To analyze that feedback and make sure it's right for them, right? And that's some people get lost in that too. I mean, that could, you know, the best feedback can ruin a story, right? If you're not careful. So you have to really kind of take everything in stride and at the end of the day, sit back, dissect it and decide what's best for you and your work.
Yeah, I sort of think in sort of that like leveling up kind of vibe. I think starting out, if you can find some people who, to your point, read, especially read the type of stuff that you're writing, that's valuable. And a critique group can be valuable. And then I think you come to a place where, you know, you're starting to get some stories picked up and things, where then you get to move to that sort of next level where the advice coming to your to you about your writing is from editors and things, right? And then, of course, you will get some feedback also from the market itself when you get the books out there and people are buying them, right? And, you know, obviously everyone would, like, you know, usually says, like, you know, try not to read your bad reviews, or try not to read your reviews at all, right? Well, I think it depends on the person, right? So, like, I don't get messed up about them. But if I see something in the review that in my own mind I felt like was a weakness in my story, and some random person comments on it, then I'll know I was probably right, you know, and I can learn from that too.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yep.
All right, you also wanted to tell us about Atlantis, which I'm excited about because I've not heard of it. JH, have you heard of that?
I have not.
No, Atlantis is a tool that I use for editing. So I'm old school. I still use, I use Word, Microsoft Word for when I'm writing.
Sure.
When I finish my first, second draft, I'll copy it into Atlantis, and it's a word processor just like Microsoft Word, and I believe it's very similar to some of the other ones that you've talked about in the past, like Scrivener, or is it Vellum? Vellum?
Yeah, well, Vellum is for the formatting side of it, and then Scrivener is like a word processor, everything right. kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, Vellum's set up like you can write in it, but it's really focused on like that final formatting stage.
Hmm. No, Atlantis is just, it's just basically another word processor, but it's got some neat tools. You can run some fact checking through it where it'll populate, you know, overused words and phrases. You know, like if you've said in your manuscript, he crossed the street a bunch of times, it'll actually tell you you've used that phrase 27 times. I don't know if there are other programs that do that. It's the only one I've ever used. So it's almost kind of fun to run through those checks and see what it throws at you. And I've always been surprised by the results. You know, even sentences that are long as 4, 5, 6 words, you know, in a manuscript of 180,000 words, maybe you've used that same sentence 3 times, right? So it's kind of nice to flake those things. And then with editing, with Atlantis in particular, I just find that it's just easier to, you know, I like to kind of change things up. You know, I want to change the screen, the background screen color, the fonts, read your work in different perspectives, you know, try and get you out of your comfort zone a little bit and just read it in a different context, so to speak. And I find that Atlantis kind of does that for me.
I just pulled up their website while you were talking and I was kind of looking at it. Like the screen kind of looks like, actually kind of looks like Scrivener a little bit. But yeah, just glancing through here, it looks like it's supposed to be, it's clearly been around for a minute, right? Because it's like,
oh yeah.
Atlantis yeah. Word Processor supports a wide range of Windows versions, right from 2000 and XP all the way up to the latest. That's funny.
I think Atlantis was around before Scrivener. Like this goes back, you know, when I wrote The Wrath of Czar, like years and years and years ago, like they've been around a long time. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I'd never even heard of it.
Yeah. No, and there's they have a free version, they got a paid version, and the free version works just fine for what I use it for.
I'm just looking at this image here and that's interesting. I mean, you're not gonna get me off Scrivener, but so specifically then, I guess, so you just like the fact-checking tools and things, or is there other things from an editing standpoint that makes you move to this for your editing draft?
No, I think for me, it's just trying to break up the normal, right?
Just put it in
a different format, in a different screen, and trying to read your book from a different perspective as much as that's feasible. And that's, it works for me, right? And they've got some neat editing tools in there, like I said, and, you know, repeated words, repeated phases, and it's I always find that interesting after you finish a novel and you run that and you look through it and like, wow, I used this particular word like 2,000 times in a 187,000 word manuscript, right? Like, that's a lot. Are you going to go through and check those words? Probably not, but it's fun, right?
I always check for the word. So I have a checklist I use that I've had for years, and one of those is to search for every use of the word that.
Mm, that's a good one.
Yeah, because a lot of those you can just clip.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, I was very bad about using it all the time. I think I've got my brain trained where I don't quite as much anymore, you know.
For me, it's more than. I use more than way too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
Yeah, I'll also run a check at the in my last draft before I send it to JH. I will check to see how many times I use the word like smiled, right?
Mm.
So how many times did I say smile? And then I have like some other replacement words I check against it, and then I just kind of try to go through and see if I can't balance those out, you know? Or laughed is another one, so it'd be like laugh, chuckled. I can't remember because my brain doesn't work tonight, but I'll have like four or five words that I could use there instead, and I'll just roll through and see how many times, and do I need to balance that out, you know?
Yeah. No, and I still firmly believe, too, after that, you got to print it out and read it on paper. I think that's just as important as anything else, and that's usually the last step, right? And get out with the red pen and mark it up.
I feel so, like, such a loser right now, because one person on the pod still prints their manuscript on paper and uses a red pen. The other one makes a robot read it to her. I'm just over here acting like a normal person.
Yeah.
Not right now, you're not. You keep freezing in the frame, and so you're moving very robotically.
I'm so boring, JH. I just edit my stuff and send it to you. I don't have any cool, like, oh, I sit down with a dog and I read it to the dog and see if he barks or wags his tail or not. That's going to be my new step.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think that's cool. You got to do what works for you, right? Mine's really, I'm actually not opposed. I like what you do, Shane. I've done that before, actually, on my last draft, just printed it and gone through it that way. I don't need more. I used to. JH's, I think, is really cool. She'll make Scrivener read the whole book to her in robot voice. But like that one for me, I'm like, I don't have this kind of time in my life. So
I think it's a great idea, though. I think hearing someone read your work, even if it's a robot, I think there's a benefit to that.
Yeah.
I used to do it myself, but then I kept losing my voice, and I'm like, I'm going to have this robot do it, and then I'm not losing my voice every day.
Well, in fairness, we wanted to get to a place where we were reading each other's stuff, right? So I would read her what she wrote, and she would listen to her book in my voice, and vice versa. That way we could catch it. Just, we don't, you know, who has the time to do that?
Yeah. Might have to make time for that.
I wish we hadn't had this conversation right now on the podcast. this one's going to be haunting me for weeks, months, years. Oh, okay, that's a tool. Oh, man, we are nearly to the end. JH is having more technical difficulties. She can barely hear us now. She's using some old shoddy headphones. And
no, these are new.
Oh, well, they're not working very well for her, apparently.
They're just not as loud for some reason. I don't know why.
Whoever. Whatever. JH is having technical difficulties. And Shane told us, as if you heard the World Fantasy episode, this will come as no surprise to you. He told us such a good, hilarious story while we weren't recording. So, bummer for
that's
you.
That's usually
guys.
How it works.
Yeah. That's Shane's move. Tells me funny stories that I can't share. So, Creatives on Fire. Let's do it. I'm actually really excited about this one because Shane has some pretty unique experience he can bring to this particular conversation. And that, aside from the writing gig, Shane actually owns his own business. So I thought it would be cool to have him sort of talk about that a little bit and how that kind of intersects with writing and what knowledge he pulls from that to bring over to his writing business. So, Shane?
Yeah, I mean, where do we even start with that one? I mean, yeah, I'm self-employed, electrician. And we just celebrated 20 years.
And that's phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah, I know, we're proud of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been so busy this year too. I mean, we didn't even have a chance to celebrate, really, the 20-year mark. 25, we'll be here. You know, I'm going to blank and it's going to be 25 years, and we'll do a big, big party for that one. You know, we got a Christmas party coming up in a couple of weeks, and we'll let loose a little bit and kind of celebrate that achievement. But yeah, no, it's been a fun ride. I mean, the first 5 years was tough, to say the least. I mean, I didn't know anything about operating a business when we started. I mean, it was myself and my partner Andy. We're just two guys, good electricians, good workers, but we had no idea how to run a business.
Sure.
And we just winged it, to be honest. I mean, we didn't have a clue what we were doing. And, you know, over the first 5-6 years, we made a lot of mistakes. A lot of mistakes that really, if we would have just stopped and maybe talked to some people, you know, maybe we could have avoided some stuff. But in time, I mean, we just continue to grow. And looking back on it right now, it's going to sound kind of corny, but it really, it's the people that matter the most. Mm-hmm. It really is. Like, I mean, we just turned 20, but next year we're going to have our first employee hit that 20-year milestone with us, 20-year employee.
Wow.
And then the next year I've got two more. And the year after that, I think there's three or four more. It's crazy. Like, everybody has been with us since the beginning. And that's where my success has come from, is our people. Really, at the end of the day, I wouldn't be where I am today without, I think I've got almost 200 employees right now, and I wouldn't be I am today without any one of them, right?
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was that and big. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a phenomenal family that we've built. And I guess, I mean, to roll that into the writing side, I mean, I kind of just take that same philosophy, and maybe that's why I'm so passionate about my writing group, is because I've tried to surround myself with like-minded people who excite me and motivate me to be better and work harder and create and share. And I think that's the successful tip for any business, is to surround yourself with that right group of people. You know, understanding what your right. You got to understand what your strengths and weaknesses are. And that applies to both, you know, electrical, and it applies to writing, right? And that's, you find people who can, you fill those holes with people for your weaknesses, right? That's what you do, and that's really what it comes down to, and it plays on both sides.
Well, and interestingly enough, I actually heard a parallel right at the start when you were talking about it, because you effectively said the same thing happened in your electrician business that we both described happening in our writing business, and that was very early on making all the mistakes that, you know, if we could have just asked somebody or had some kind of resource to lead us away from, maybe we could have avoided those sorts of things. So I think that's part of it, you know, and I think people should, if they're starting their writing journey, they should kind of take both parts of that, right? Because we talked about both of us and sort of what happened early on. And then, you know, even in your business, you said sort of the same thing, that there were mistakes you guys made that you probably could have avoided if you just would have asked somebody. So I think that's a powerful thing. You can avoid a lot of mistakes if you educate yourself, if you listen to this podcast, if you read books about writing, if you listen to other podcasts, if you go to conventions, you'll kind of learn to avoid some of the missteps.
People want to help, right? People want to help. And that's, it's no different than in business and people in writing. I mean, I meet people at World Fantasy and almost right away, it's like, hey, what do you do? What do you write? What are you here for? And immediately you just want to help, whatever you can do. And that's, And I think that says the same for most people, right? Mm-hmm. You know, even in business, you know, if you're going to start a business, it makes sense to go to other businesses who are doing more or less the same thing and sit down with them and ask them for 5 minutes of their time and pick their brain. And most business owners, in my opinion, will say, absolutely, pick a time, let's make it work. Most of them will. Most of them will.
Yeah, I think it's true. I agree. Even here in the States, where we aren't as nice as you.
Yeah. No, people in business are usually passionate about business, really, at the end of the day. And I love it. I love talking about business, especially with other business-minded people, right? Mm-hmm. And when I go to the cons, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, you talk writing, and it's a passion, and that's, we're all there for a reason, and that's to learn and to help each other. And it's, and for those people who are just breaking in and trying to, you know, to get their footing, and man, it really just makes sense to just find that community and be part of it, right? Go to cons.
Yeah. It's a good thing you said that, because I was actually going to say, like, for the ending, I normally am, like, tell the people where to find you. But for you, I just want to be like, if you guys want to come find Shane, and you should, you need to go to World Fantasy, and you'll just find him.
Yeah. I'll be there.
Walk up to him and give him a hug. Whisper in his ear, I heard you on the
Future Chances are
podcast.
Nah, chances are it's the bar. Just the first place to look.
That's a good place to start. It's a good place to start if you're looking for Shane. Any other final thoughts or things you want to share with the world today, Shane?
No, this has been fun. I'm glad you talked me into joining. It was a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite as nervous as I was. Yeah, not quite as nervous as I was when we did that one at a World Fantasy there.
Mm-hmm. You were fine. It was all right.
Yeah.
I was kind of a jerk anyways. I was making fun of you, so that probably didn't help.
No, you were fine. You're just Phil.
Yeah, that's standard for him. Yeah.
I don't know if...
Being a jerk.
I don't know if you guys are complimenting me or not. It's so hard to tell. I mean, I know you just called me a jerk, JH, but you said it with so much love and admiration.
Yeah. Of course.
Oh, yeah. All right, Shane, tell the people where to find you.
You can go to my website. It's ShaneEason.com. It's Shane with a Y, Eason with two S's. And yeah, I've got, I do have some books coming out in the next year or so, as many as three, maybe in the next two, 3 years, if luck plays out. So I haven't released anything in a long time, but that's going to change soon.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too.
And like you said, you can find him at the World Fantasy Conventions bar.
Yeah,
you'll probably find me there too. I'll be the loud one. He'll be the nice one.
Yeah. 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 Apologizing to everyone on Phil's behalf.
Well, you know somebody's got to, because you know JH isn't going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, JH, tell the peoples where to find you.
You can find me at jhfleming.net. I'm also on all the social media places. You can hire me on Fiverr. Also on all the music places for my band with our debut album. So Bandcamp, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Music, all those fun places.
And I am Philip Dreyer Duncan, and you can find me at philipdreyerduncan.com and go buy my books, because it's almost Christmas time and I don't have any money to get JH a gift. So you guys got to buy my books.
Liar.
Come on. This is marketing here. This is what you do. buy my books because you love me, people. All right. This has been another episode of Future Bestseller, futurebestsellerpodcast.com. And Shane Eason, it's a pleasure, my friend. I'm glad you joined us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys in February.
That's right.
Yes.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Awesome.